From deep inside Death Star at Moscone Center, I'm Larry Larson, and you are...
Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So we are at the Build Conference, and we wanted to do a Defrag Tools while we're here.
Yep.
No topic in particular. We were going to have Mark Rusinovich on, but he bailed.
The press got in the way.
Yeah, he's got to talk to the press. So. Yeah. So we'll talk to you here today. So a little bit first about Defrag Tools. Tell us what the show is.
So
it's a Mark Rusinovich tribute show.
It is. That's what it started as.
Yeah.
And then it peaked. you started the series with Gove years ago called Defrag Show that went over like a Q&A type thing.
It's helping people with Microsoft products, talking about how to fix your problems and stuff like that. And we never really, we try to take a lot of different questions each show, so we never had the time to deep dive into how to fix things.
Yeah. And so I pitched to you saying, let's go deep.
I said, I'd love it. Yeah.
And 84 episodes and... three builds later and a couple of tech heads later, here we are. So
yeah, and for Channel 9 Live, we go live during the breaks. We're not live right now. We record in between the live segments, but we stream sessions, and then in between the sessions, we do the live thing. So yeah, we've got a full schedule, and that's what we're doing here. And this little camera, if you've seen this on Channel 9 Live, the little white camera in the front here, that's a Ricoh Theta, and I can sit back there with an iOS device, unfortunately. They don't have a Windows Phone app. But you hit the button, and it takes a perfectly stitched photosynth. So I've been tweeting the different photosynths from some of the guests. So
the lens is...
Yeah, it's got a lens on each side.
On both sides.
Yeah, and it just...
Full dome.
That's a whole thing. One button, bam.
Nice.
So it's really cool. The only thing that could be better is I wish it had better resolution.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So this is also the week of Channel 9's birthday.
Yep. Well,
so,
last week as far as this is airing.
It's actually April 6th.
Oh, okay.
So the first video, I thought it went up March 26th, I think. And then Charles, he slammed me. He's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. We magic foldered the videos in. And if you don't know, magic folder is the way that we publish our videos.
All the encoding and stuff, all the different resolutions.
Yep. And he said, we magic foldered those videos in, but we didn't go live until April 6th. So April 6th is the actual birthday for Channel 9. We'll be 10 years old. So, yay, happy birthday.
And Microsoft's birthday is...
tomorrow?
Was Friday.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
3 days ago for us, tomorrow for us, real life.
Yep.
1975, which makes Microsoft 39.
Wow.
So about to be a midlife person. So happy birthday to Channel 9. Happy birthday to Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And you've got a talk here at Build, right? What are you talking
about? I do. So on Friday, it's called Avoiding Windows Store Issues or App Crashes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We keep on changing the title. It's all about... capturing a crash and looking at it, or capturing a hang, and then
Specific to Windows Store apps or just
Windows Store
in
apps for phone and for Windows Store ecosystem? Phone and Windows, not Xbox, and how to debug into those, and then that's only a small part of it. What we've come back with is we looked at all the telemetry that's coming into Microsoft, and we worked out what the big hitting mistakes are.
Yeah.
And then we're going to drive into examples of making mistakes with null pointers, making mistakes of not having try-catch around exception handlers.
Yeah, yeah.
The way you suspend an application and save state, the way that you incorrectly use the API. The API doesn't support what's called complex types.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't persist something like an array. It has to be an intrinsic, like an int or a string. It can't be an array of ints. And so if you try to do that, it will explode. And the last one is background tasks. So background tasks is a very interesting one because nobody sees them going wrong, yet behind the scenes, we know from a telemetry point of view, things are going wrong. Background tasks have to use at least some CPU, but conversely not use too much CPU. There's a quota involved. And once you step out of bounds, we get reports. And the other thing you get told to do, particularly in the 8.1 timeframe, is if you suspend, you have 5 seconds until you must be complete.
Yeah.
And you have to dispose of the deferral, which is what the terminology is. And a lot of people haven't implemented the cancellation event handler, which means you don't know to be told to shut down, which means you don't start your path towards closure.
Yeah.
And because of that ignorance, at 5 seconds later, we go, whack, you're dead. But before we do that, we snap a dump of you and send it up. Now, unfortunately, that's not one of the things we report on through the portal, but so that's why we're trying to educate people on how to use those APIs appropriately. And there's, of course, there's white papers and stuff we've generated to help us give out that story too.
So has anything changed with troubleshooting for Windows 8.1 Update 1?
Yeah, there's a part of the debuggability that we're talking about in the talk is in 8.0, there's a concept called stored exceptions. And roughly, it's a way of marshaling an exception between the Windows RT runtime through that language projection layer up to the app. Now, the way that it was done in 8.0 timeframe, it was through a thing called co-originate exception. But it didn't have any payload. It didn't give you the stack or anything of real use. And so we evolved that into co-originate language exception, which means the .NET exception is brought up with you, so you get to see stacks and strings and stuff like that. But we realized that there was no deterministic way for that data to be carved out of a process and then brought up into Windows Error Reporting, because we save a very small amount, and we're finding that with this version 1 structure that's in 8.0 later releases and 8.1, that it was missing still. And so, it was scheduled for the update, but version 2 actually shipped in March, so one patch Tuesday early. So patch Tuesday tomorrow, you'll get the Windows 8.1 update. So that one has deterministic inclusion of this data. So if a CLR exception is what brought you down, the dump file that's uploaded to Windows Error Reporting for your, and you can go to the developer portal to read that, or our internal telemetry, we're guaranteed to have the data required to do the analysis, and we can we'll show that in the demonstration tomorrow, and if we have time today, we'll do that too.
Cool. And how have the tools changed from what we used in the past to what we use now?
We're still very WinDBG focused from a debuggability point of view. Unfortunately, this whole extraction between the layers hasn't really been tackled by Visual Studio yet. I mean, live debugging is fantastic. I mean, if you crash in a live debugging scenario, it's as rich and as beautiful as always been. Things like, what's it called, Just My Code, for example, strips out all that Microsoft plumbing and just gives you the code that you wrote, so you can step over code better and not find yourself drilling into the code, which is kind of ironic now that Rosalind's out that you could actually do that.
Yeah.
So it's more of still a WinDBG point of view from a crash debug point of view, and still definitely a Visual Studio centric approach for live debug.
Yeah.
When it comes to JavaScript versus CLR versus C++ native, and then old desktop native, the tools are pretty on par across the board. WinDBG has about the same abilities across all platforms. Same thing goes with Visual Studio. So it's pretty on par at the moment. There was feature in disparity, and that's what we've been doing recently, is getting everybody up to the same playground.
So we're going to have a short show today because we got to get off here so that we can go back to live. Show us your demo before we run out of time.
So here's the Defrag Tools website. There's a SkyDrive associated with the link with the website that has a lot of the source code that we go through. And we've had 80-odd episodes, and we've developed a lot of demo apps so you can play along with the show and see what we're doing. One of the things that I've released very recently is a debugger extension called PDE. It's only been on the SkyDrive for a couple of days.
Okay.
So what happens with what you can do is on a local machine when you have a crash, or if you download a file from from the developer website, you can look at crashes and you can collect them personally. So instead of installing Visual Studio in a box, you can ask procdump, for example, to install and capture dump files like this. Once you've installed that and there's a crash on the system, and I've got some demo apps here that crash, so like I'll grab this one I just used for playing with, very simple mixture of C# and JavaScript app. What I'm going to do is fire an unhandled CLR exception, right? So something that I have no try catch for.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that, and as you expect, it kind of freezes for a little while. And what's happening in the background is procdump got called, and it made a dump file, and I asked it to put it into C dumps. And here is my dump file. So I've got the right file associations to bring up procdump, bring up WinDBG.
Mm-hmm.
The general rule in WinDBG is whenever you see this ECXR command execute it, it's telling you there is an exception context record, which means we know how to get to the point in memory that explains this best, the registers are set correctly, and it explains the exception code. And the exception code here is, you can see it by doing minus, dot exception record, dot EXR, and minus one means the one in the ECXR record. WinDBG is a complex beast, I know, but
yeah,
that's what it is. And then when you do this on any store application, you will see that the exception code is always C00027B. So traditionally, all the way back to Windows 3.1, up to Windows 7 and 8 for desktop apps, that would have a code like access violation or some RPC not disconnected or something.
Mm-hmm.
With store apps, you're always going to get this 27B.
Yeah.
Now, there's a whole lot of hexadecimal mumbo jumbo you can go through that uses the two parameters. Roughly, this is saying there is two exceptions have been recorded. So it means that something happened, it was caught, logged that presence, and then it was rethrown again. And then that's what finally brought us down. And so you can have a chain of events. And store exceptions can go across processes. So you can watch like a process over here crashing, coming across, and then continuing on. And then all the data is in here. Instead of doing the hexadecimal mumbo jumbo, you can use that debugger extension I told you could download.
Mm-hmm.
And the command is PDE, which is the name of the code, and then display store exception. And this worries about all the magic math and the display and how to rebuild stacks. And you can see the raw native stack that handled this, you can see that the error code that truly is inside all this is not implement exception. I threw in my code, not implement the exception.
Yeah.
You can see that all the marshalling. So you can see that WinRT playing between WinRT itself and the language,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's that language projection layer. And without some knowledge and trickiness in the code, that's where you would end. And so what I did was with this debugger extension is get you to the next phase. And what we do is in the version 2 record, we can unpack that saved data and actually get back to the original CLR exception. So in this case, the program's called OEM Support Diagnostics, so that's the module name. And then there's a page, which is how I've done the namespace for each of the pages in the app. There's a debugging page, and then we hit the second button, and unsurprisingly, on the click event, that's what happened. So the click event raised a system dot not implemented exception. Here's some text. If it was something like maybe an XML exception or an HTTP exception, don't be surprised to see maybe the website name or some node in the XML explaining what went wrong. And then there's your answer. So through this magic of DSE, the display stored exception, you can unwind this cryptographic, really weird hexadecimal type of debugging session down to a single command. As I said, in this case, it has two. And if we look at from the bottom up, we can see that the first exception started way down here in the core of the UI. It dispatched stuff. We went up into XAML, and we're processing input. Well, I touched the screen with my finger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a touch on the screen, so the natural user input API had to be used. It was trying to overlay what I did with gestures.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working out was a double click or all that type of stuff, or a single click or a right click. And that's why there's natural user input DLLs there. It comes back in there. It was a touch interaction. It raised it saying this has to be presented to someone. This is all written in C code. So even though it kind of looks like C sharp, this is actually the C++ WinRT API underneath the whole surface.
Yeah.
And then you can actually see it using traditional desktop APIs, send message. So you can see it coming back to the intrinsic Win32, which truly is driving this stuff. And then it dispatches off and goes to another window and then comes back to a different XAML window. So now we're back into WinRT. And then you can see it slowly going, well, this is part of a UI element on a XAML page. And there's a button base, and there's the button click from the base class. And then it goes to the derived class. And then finally goes, well, I have a source associated with this, which is the code in the XAML. I need to execute that. So that was the first impetus of the invocation. And then it came into what we now know is the CLR code. That failed because nobody caught the exception. Mm-hmm. The exceptions go from the CLR world back into WinRT for handling. And then so that's why we see WinRT handling a COM exception and then raising it as an exception based from a language primitive.
Nice.
So very convoluted, very techy, but that's unfortunately what is required. Things are complex these days.
Yeah.
You introduce XAML into the equation, well, where's the code? Well, it's all an interpretive code of XML, right? And this is the manifestation of that.
Yeah.
So, as I said, the debug extension is on the OneDrive of the Defrag Show's site. And you can get that from the front page of the Defrag Tools website.
Cool. What kinds of things do we want to talk about over the next year with Defrag Tools?
Well, there's a lot of interest in stabilizing, well, from my particular, I mean, my role is analyzing crashes and hangs.
Yeah.
Right? And so we know.
You are Dr. Watson.
I am. There is three guys in my time. Shout out to Graham and Vio. You know, we kind of have centric roles on people who do bug checks, the blue screens,
yeah.
People who do application crashes, and people who do application hangs. And collectively, we work on a broader ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, things like, you know, how do you detect memory bit flips? I mean, hardware goes bad, causes single bits to flip. How do you work out that, you know, intrinsically across any type of issue?
Yeah.
We're trying to move towards a more small, stable, and quality ecosystem. And actually, there's a big, massive flag right behind us that says, you know, quality drives costs.
Yeah.
If you have a higher quality app, people give you better scores on your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if something crashes, you're going to get a one star straight away.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're driving that type of approach. And that is more than just hangs and crashes.
Yeah.
It's did you handle, I don't know, Wi-Fi going away? What happens if your ISP, like your cable goes down?
Or latency.
Or latency as well. Yeah. Latency, great example. You know, if you have a network where you're talking to your router, that's cool, it looks like,
yeah.
And you can talk to the machines in your network, so it's definitely nothing wrong with your network.
So how do you test that? I mean, do you yank the internet cable out of the router so you still have a network but you don't have an internet connection?
Yeah, you need to kind of fabricate these real-world scenarios,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, latency is a good, you said that latency, that's a very hard one to do, right? You need someone who's latent.
So you could deploy, I mean, with like Azure, you could deploy into another country on the other side of the world. What? How do you test latency other than that? What?
Well, the straight, you know, trace route will tell you how far it is, you know, all of the places through the world. A straight ping, assuming the foreign resource is pingable. Sysinternals has a tool called PS ping. So the problem with ping, this inbox ping, is it just does ICMP. And most systems block ICMP because there's no reason to accept that traffic. So PS ping lets you choose a port. So you can go talk to, you know, microsoft.com:80, and instead of opening an ICMP UDP packet to that, it will open a TCP packet and ask for a response. And so it can measure from you to that endpoint. So if you geographically, as you say, deploy your application to, say, the Singapore or the China or the Sydney data centers for Azure or whatever data centers we have that are quite remote to where you are, assuming that you're US or Europe-centric, so they're foreign to you, you will see purely the speed of light or the speed of electrons, whatever we're going to call it, a 200, 300 million round trip.
Yeah.
And if you want to experiment this, being Australian, I know that there's a site called 9msn.com, which is the Microsoft affiliate to a particular channel, TV station called Channel 9, which is, you know,
we get their email all the time.
Yeah. 9msn.com, what's in Australia, it's hosted in Australia. You know, from the US, just browse to it, and you'll realize that things like images and all these things don't come down like bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
They come down like dunk, 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 because it's 200 or 300 milliseconds every trip around the circle. And there's a thing called a TCP receive window. You can only put a certain amount out in the wire before Windows goes, I'm not hearing any responses, any ACKs, TCP ACKs.
Yeah.
And so it stops. it stops transmitting. And after a certain point, it goes, wow, this has been a long time. Mm-hmm. It actually starts doing retransmits because it assumes it never ate it. So it's going. So you're going from New York to Sydney. Well, you're in flight. You're coming around, and then it's on its way back, and then you start doing retransmits.
Yeah.
Right? And you're causing this extra burden on the network, like half your bandwidth is going in retransmits.
It's like some kind of feedback loop.
Yeah, and then and also the foreign server's going, I've already had this packet. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And so be aware of stuff like that. Be aware that if it's a foreign server, you're not going to get a response that's immediate.
Yeah.
Don't have timers in your code that go, you know, I expect this to be here in under a second, because some places aren't going to be under a second.
Yeah.
Particularly when it comes to responsiveness too, right? If you have a UI that's designed to be responsive, be aware that doing a server trip to make that responsive effect may not be possible.
Yeah.
You need to be more client focused with your UI and defer to the background more of this latency stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's the show for this week. And if you have any questions, write us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we will see you next week.
See you next week.